Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Speedy Trial Post-Decision Edition. Thanks for tuning in. On Monday, March 9th, the Supreme Court announced its decision in Vermont v. Brillon. In this case, the Supreme Court considered whether delays, caused solely by public defenders, can constitute a violation of a criminal defendant's Sixth Amendment right to a speedy trial on the theory that such delay is attributable to the state. In a 7-2 decision delivered by Justice Ginsburg, the court held that delay caused by a defendant's counsel, whether publicly assigned or privately retained, is ordinarily attributable to the defendant, reversing the Vermont Supreme Court ruling below. To discuss the decision, we welcome Assistant United States Attorney for the Southern District of Florida, Ted Cooperstein. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Cooperstein.
The Supreme Court ruled in the case of Vermont versus Brillon on a claim for violation of the Sixth Amendment right to speedy trial. The facts in brief are as follows. Michael Brillon was convicted in a Vermont criminal court of the crime of aggravated assault, which was a felony. He basically had struck his girlfriend at the same time that he was under a court restraining order not to harass her. Because he also had passed prior criminal convictions, he was eligible for a potential life sentence, and following a jury trial and conviction, he was sentenced to imprisonment of 12 to 20 years. Now, the key facts for this case and holding were the time delay between arraignment and actual trial, which was essentially a 3-year period pre-trial, or 2 years and 11 months. During the course of that 3-year period, Brillon had gone through 6 attorneys, all appointed and state-funded counsels, assigned to him by the Vermont Public Defender's Office, also known as the Defender General's Office. Brillon had fired his first attorney after he had moved to recuse the trial judge unsuccessfully and gone through a succession of other attorneys who in turn had sought and received continuances, each time stating that the defendant had consented to the continuance. The second attorney appointed for Brillon withdrew for conflict of interest. The third attorney withdrew after the defendant had threatened him physically. The fourth defense attorney moved to withdraw because he was leaving a criminal practice. The fifth defense attorney had delays in getting the file and ultimately withdrew at the expiration of his contract with the Defender General's Office. The sixth defense counsel was the one that finally took the case to trial. After extended delays and additional discovery, this counsel actually moved to dismiss the case on speedy trial grounds. The trial court denied the speedy trial motion and held that the delay was because of the defendant's changes of counsel and that there had been no actual prejudice to the defendant. Now, after the jury trial and conviction, the defense renewed their motion and it was again denied by the trial court. On appeal to the Vermont Supreme Court, the 5 justices of the Vermont State Supreme Court reversed the denial of that speedy trial motion on a 3-2 vote. They held that the 3-year delay before going to trial violated Brillon's Sixth Amendment right. They held that the delay was extreme in the amount of 3 years, that the case was not complex, and that 2 of those 3 years' delay were attributable to the state by virtue of the fact that the representative of the defendant was appointed and paid for by the public defender system, and they held that the Defender General's Office is a part of the criminal justice system and therefore under the control of the state, and attributed all delays from those defense counsel to the state of Vermont. The 2 dissenters on the Vermont Supreme Court ruling held that the lion's share of the delay was attributable, in fact, to the defendant, and personally so. And, of course, the Supreme Court of the United States then granted certiorari to consider whether or not this was, in fact, a violation of the Sixth Amendment right to speedy trial. Now, for the party's arguments before the Supreme Court, the petitioner, being the state of Vermont, or the prosecution, argued first that the delays by the public defender or the appointed counsel should not be held attributable to the state. To hold contrary, they argued, would permit the defendants to game the system by delaying their own trials and to ultimately reap a dismissal once they've delayed the trials long enough. They also argue that trial defense attorneys acting on behalf of defendants should not be counted against the state because attorneys need the leeway to manage the trial and set their own trial strategy as they see fit. They argue that the attorney is an agent of the defendant and the delays by that attorney are properly attributable to a defendant. They also argue that the public defender role in particular acts on behalf of the defendant and not the state, and should be viewed in the same position as any retained counsel as acting as an agent for the defendant. Finally, they concluded, therefore, there should be no speedy trial violation deemed to have occurred in this case because the defendant personally caused much of the delay. The defendant's attorney does not count for a speedy trial violation. They finally argued that the remainder of the time that would not be attributable to defense counsel in this case was not sufficient over such a short period of time that it should not be viewed as a constitutional violation of the speedy trial right. At the Supreme Court, the respondent's argument on behalf of Michael Berlin, the defendant, argued that the government actor in this situation is the public defender because it is a government agency as a whole that administratively assigns the counsel to the defendant and is responsible for the workings of the system. They also argued that the Vermont State Supreme Court was entitled to deference from the United States Supreme Court because of the Vermont court's greater knowledge of the Vermont criminal court system and the problems of court congestion, negligence, prosecutorial inaction, and dilatory discovery in their system. The opinion of the court was written by Justice Ginsburg, joined by six other justices, so it was a 7-2 opinion. The holding in brief was that a state is not responsible for delays before trial if it results from tactics or omissions by the public defenders who are representing the criminal defendant. Appointed defense counsel are not to be held state actors, and where assigned counsel is to blame for delays, it is to be attributed to the defendant and not to the state, merely because of the appointed or assigned role of the counsel. Justice Ginsburg's opinion reviewed the relevant precedent under the Sixth Amendment speedy trial right, the case known as Barker versus Wingo, which issued in 1972, and applied that precedent to find that the Vermont Supreme Court had made fundamental errors in applying the four-part balancing test called for in the Barker case. Now, that four-part test to determine whether or not there was a violation of the speedy trial right called for looking at, one, the length of the delay, two, the reasons for the delay, three, whether the defendant had asserted his right to a speedy trial, and four, finally, the practical result as to whether there was, in fact, any prejudice to the defendant. Now, in this case of Michael Brillen's trial, all conceded that a 3-year time period was relatively extreme, so it was a lengthy delay. But the primary focus of Judge Ginsburg's opinion, and the meat of it, if you will, was the second part of the four-part test, the reason for the delay. Basically, was the government or the defendant more to blame for the delay in getting this case to trial? Justice Ginsburg ruled that because the attorney is the agent of the defendant, delays of that attorney are attributed to the defendant. She held that this is the same for retained or appointed counsel, and except for the source of their payment, the relationship between any appointed counsel and his defendant is to be viewed as identical to the relationship by any other attorney and his client. Therefore, she concluded that unlike a prosecutor or the court, appointed counsel is not to be viewed as a state actor. In this reasoning, then, the court held that the Vermont State Supreme Court had erred by attributing to the defense counsel the delay, and therefore specifically equating defense counsel delay to state action. The defense counsel acted only on behalf of Brillen in this case, and the resulting delay was attributed, therefore, to Brillen. Justice Ginsburg in the court also noted that if there were to be a contrary ruling, as Brillen had sought, that ruling would encourage future appointed counsel to move for unnecessary or even unreasonable delays in most criminal trials, in the hopes that they eventually would benefit from accumulated delay in merit dismissal of their case. The trial courts would in turn have to bring greater skepticism to any requests for delay made by appointed counsel, and that would make them significantly in a different position than retained counsel, who would not suffer from the same skepticism. The Vermont Supreme Court was also faulted for viewing different defendant counsel's portions of the total delay, the total period attributable to each of the successive individual counsels, so to speak, differently. They specifically failed to account for the defendant Brillen's personal role in the first of the 3 years of delays, because in that first year, he himself was personally responsible for the physical threats to his counsel, for the aggressive attempts to remove his counsel and otherwise his actions that impeded trial and made the public defender's job difficult. That also made it more difficult successively going forward for the Defender General's office to keep appointing successor counsel for this defendant. Brillen's deliberate attempts to disrupt the proceedings should be held against the defendant, the court ruled. And absent Brillen's efforts to force the withdrawal of his counsel, Justice Ginsburg held that no issue of speedy trial would actually have arisen. Finally, Justice Ginsburg, in her opinion for the court, noted that this was not an absolute and ironclad ruling because it leaves open the possibility of a total breakdown of a particular state's public defender's system. But the facts of this case of Mr. Brillen's conviction did not, in fact, present that situation, and it's not very likely that we would see that in future cases. Now, it should be noted there was a dissent written by Justice Breyer and joined by John Paul Stevens, and that dissent essentially said they would rather have dismissed the case as improvidently granted and not actually reached a decision. Justice Breyer believed that the record was ambiguous as to whether certain portions of the delay were attributed to the state or attributed to the public defender as an arm of the state, and therefore he thought it didn't quite clearly present the issue as stated and would have rather avoided the question entirely. So to sum up the significance of the case, it reinforces first the idea that defense counsel do act as agents of the defendant, to whom they owe their first priority and for whom they are always acting, and they're not to be viewed as state actors in that regard. Secondly, it preserves the parity in the roles and responsibilities of retained versus assigned counsel, and they're not to be treated or have any different obstacles or burdens in representing their respective clients in a criminal case. And finally, the case foreclosed a possible source of defendant mischief and harm to the criminal justice system by preventing an opportunity for defendants and energetic criminal defense counsel to game the system and try to engender dismissals of criminal cases.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video from past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at federalistsociety.org/multimedia.